Hi, this is Steve. Whenever I'm out of the office for a bit, I always check in to ask, are there any messages for me? Summer takes us out of the routine, and I know this means you might miss a Sunday at South Main from time to time. When you do miss, I hope you'll check in right here and ask, are there any messages for me? Because the answer is yes. Yes, there are. This summer at South Main, we've been exploring the compelling life of the disciple Peter each Sunday, and his life experiences. His seismic and captivating experiences are full of fascinating messages for us. Listen, here's this week's.
My uncle, your friend, and fellow South Mainer Larry Funderburk and I were trying a lawsuit down in Bay City, Texas. And we represented a company who had fired an employee who'd failed a drug test. And the employee claimed he had been wrongfully terminated, so we were there to try the case, and as the trial wore on, we seemed to be losing every single ruling that the judge made. And though Larry is typically pretty unflappable during trial, I could see the judge and the judge's rulings were beginning to get under his skin. And with each successive ruling against us, frustration was starting to come out in his body language, and pretty soon in his remarks to the judge. And the judge, beginning to hear this, while not flat out threatening Larry with being held in contempt of court, made it clear that he wasn't far from it. So the trial advanced. And time passed, and yet another major ruling, a big ruling, went against us. And I see Larry is now about to lose it. And so during a break, I took him aside and I said, Larry, you cannot get held in contempt. Because one, I'm not calling Linda to tell her husband is in jail. And secondly, and just as importantly, I can't try the rest of this case by myself. So please, no contempt. No contempt, I'm begging you. And things did. They smoothed out, and eventually we not only won the case, but Larry made it home to Houston having avoided spending a night in the Matagorda County Jail. And I tell you this story this morning because to be up to the challenge that Jesus has set out before us in today's text on forgiveness, we've got to internalize these very same words. No contempt. Well, we're deep into our summer series on the life of Peter, and we're in the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 18, verses 21 through 35, as you heard Tate read just a minute ago. And in it, Peter asks, how many times, Jesus, must we forgive those who sin against us? And Peter suggests perhaps 7 times, and I think he thought he was being generous. But Jesus says, no, not 7 times, but 70 times 7. Making the point that if you're counting, if you're keeping score at all, if you're keeping a ledger, if the scoreboard is on, you're missing the whole point of grace. And then, yes, Jesus launches into this story, a compelling story, a parable, in which a master forgives a slave who's indebted to him, to the tune of $12 million. And then moments later, this same slave strangles a fellow slave over a measly 20 bucks. And those, by the way, are the correct ratios in dollars, all from which we're supposed to see, of course, that in light of God's extravagant forgiveness offered to each of us, our forgiveness of each other's sins against one another is required. It's commanded. It's obligatory for us. In fact, if we take the accompanying parable seriously, Jesus seems to be saying that our salvation hangs upon this. It depends upon this. So you have to forgive. It's just that simple. But it's not that simple, is it? In fact, it might be harder than you think. Sebastian Younger is an author, a best-selling author, and in his most recent book called Tribe, he writes that a deep interdependence with one another was how our hunter-gatherer distant ancestors survived. And in fact, in terms of Darwinian evolution, it was the groups which learned not only to work together best, but who also most effectively punished those within the group who didn't cooperate, that then outfought, outhunted, and outbred the rest of them. That is, a particular gene pool only really flourished if the tribe was utterly intolerant of selfishness and all forms of me-first behavior. And though, of course, there have been huge changes in how we live since then, since the time that our forebears lived in these nomadic tribes, because it takes a genetic adaptation about 25,000 years to even begin to change human beings, our genes, our genetics, are essentially the same as theirs were hundreds of thousands of years ago. And this might be, this is my theory at least, this might be why we still, to this day, seem to have such a visceral reaction to people cutting in line in front of us or cutting us off in traffic. It's as if some sort of memory is triggered, a memory that's hardwired into us from a time when we were nearly eaten by a tiger because someone pushed us aside when we were trying to climb up a tree. And that's because for our ancestors to tolerate offensive selfishness and me at the expense of you conduct was to court serious injury. To ignore it, or worse yet, to forgive it, only to have it happen again, was to make yourself vulnerable to the possibility of a horrible death. To ration out second chances judiciously was probably nothing less than a survival instinct. But if that's what helped our ancestors survive, if it's quite literally what got us here, what do we do now when we know better? When our faith teaches us we have to let go, we have to forgive each other. Against such stiff genetic headwinds, how do we even approach this standard that Jesus has given us, 70 times 70, forgiveness, this standard? Well, John Gottman is a marriage counselor, he's a psychologist, and he's also a university professor at the University of Washington, who, after meeting with the couples that he is counseling, that he's trying to help, for just a single hour, just 1 hour, he can predict with 94% accuracy whether the couple will divorce within the next 3 years. And you know how he does it? He watches for eye rolling. He's found that it's not anger that predicts divorce, but contempt, sarcasm, derisive sneering, dismissive scoffing, hostile humor, and worst of all, eye rolling. Gottman says love can be recovered against almost any odds. Reconciliation can be had despite almost any sin, but eye rolling, disdain, contempt, these are sulfuric acid to forgiveness, and thus to all hope of recovery and recovering love. So with this, with contempt as our focus, let's spend the rest of our time today and begin to construct a sort of environment of the mind and an ecosystem of the heart to develop antibodies, if you will, against this sulfuric acid of contempt from emerging so corrosively in our lives. Now, I know when we raise the issue of forgiveness, it means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. It brings a broad spectrum of things to mind, the small, the medium, and the large. Many of us struggle with the little things, the small things, the tendency to be impatient when something small happens, Our blood begins to boil, and contempt arises in our hearts almost spontaneously at minor things at work or in the home or on the road. And others struggle with things that aren't huge challenges, but are corrosive all the same, medium-type challenges. Perhaps our contempt tends to arise against people with whom we don't see eye to eye politically, especially perhaps on social media. And then finally, there are some of us who've struggled mightily with abuse, with betrayal, with negligence at the hands of parents or spouses or friends. But no matter what camp we're in, the question today, our question is, how do we forgive? How do we avoid a contemptuous heart? Well, let's start with the big. Those who perhaps face the biggest challenge due to the scope of what they've been asked to forgive. And if that's you, as we find a way forward, I want to present to you what may be a painful question. And it's really a question for all of us. And here it is. Do you think people are doing their best? When they wake up in the morning and they get out of bed, as a general matter, are people doing the best they can? You know, if you ask this to enough people, you'll find a real split. Half say, no way. People are horrible. They're mean to each other. They're reckless with one another. People are just awful. Well, if this is your belief, like it is mine sometimes, let's take a moment. Take a moment and picture that person. That person that you're trying to forgive. Have you got that picture in your head? Can you see them? Now imagine God telling you he, she, they're doing the best they can. And if that's true, maybe our anger and our contempt, our irritation, our pain, at least to some degree begins to morph, it begins to change, to transform. And maybe a sort of grieving begins over their loss and your loss. And as that happens, although there's still a long way to go, contempt begins to pull back and is perhaps soon in retreat. You know, my favorite answer to this question is from Steve Alley, the husband of Brené Brown. She asked him, Steve, do you think people are doing the best they can? And he thought about it, and then he responded. He said, I don't know. Honestly, I have no idea. But what I do know is my life is better when I assume they are. If you've been broken, but you take these verses seriously, perhaps start there and let God's grace begin to work. All right, now let's talk about this medium challenge and social media. Social media is a contempt-generating machine. So don't have arguments on it. But whether you do or you don't, here's something to think about. Jonathan Haidt is a social psychologist. He teaches at NYU. He's an expert on moral foundations theory. And Haidt's research is based on survey data from hundreds of thousands of individuals. And what he has found is that human beings have five different innate moral values. He calls them moral taste buds. And they are fairness, care for others, respect for authority, loyalty to group, and purity, sanctity. Five different values. And we have all five. All of us have all five. But a more liberal person, like Haidt himself, has mainly a two-channel or two foundational morality, which elevates fairness and care for others above the other three. While a more conservative person, while valuing fairness and care for others highly as well, also places a high emphasis on respect for authority, loyalty to tribe or group, and notions of purity and sanctity. That is, they have a five-channel or five-foundation morality. And Haidt is quick to point out, you're not more moral because you have five channels, and you're not more moral if you elevate fairness and caring for others above the other ones. The important thing to know, the important thing to internalize, is that we're just different. We're wired differently, and that how we see things is not due to our own heroic individual moral efforts or our virtue in developing a flawless moral compass, but rather, mainly, it's due to temperament, genetics, and perhaps somewhat in how we've been brought up that we see things as we do. And just knowing this helps you push back against both your own sense of moral superiority and the potential contempt you feel as you deal with people who don't see things quite the way that you do. And that's all to say that it's crucial to recognize that the vast, vast majority of us are moral creatures encoded to value compassion and fairness, who simply want our families, our friends, our communities, our world to flourish. That we mostly agree on the common why with respect to most arguments. We just differ on the best what that'll move us forward and move us toward our shared why. And what this discovery should remind all of us of is that it's just not reasonable to hold that malevolence or hatred or the animating forces behind those who we disagree with. So listen to each other's distress and put away the contempt. Okay, now for the small. And I've left this to the end because it's for all of us. All of us who get impatient due to the friction of the day and give contempt that chance to emerge, it's really for all of us. Reflect on the brevity of life. If we truly take this to heart, it brings a kind of moral and emotional clarity, a resolve not to suffer over things that don't really matter. You know, Sam Harris is a neuroscientist. Some of you may listen to his podcast. He's an author. And on his podcast recently, he went on a riff about road rage and how absurd it is. But it could be just the fellow that was in front of you at the CVS yesterday. Or almost anything. Just listen. Live with an awareness that you're going to die. And you've just got this moment, this beautiful moment. Your consciousness is bright. The sun is out or it's raining. Both are beautiful. And the person right in front of you who you'll never meet, whose hopes and sorrows you know nothing of, but which if you could, you'd recognize them as impressively similar to your own, is just driving a little slow. And this is your life, the only one you've got, and you don't know how many moments you have left. You've had 1,000 chances to tell the people closest to you that you love them in a way that they can feel it and that you can feel it. And you've missed almost all of them. And you don't know how many more you're going to get. But right now, you have this next moment, this next interaction with another living human being to make the world a better place. You know, you're in a game right now, and you can't see the clock. Feel the preciousness and the beauty of life, and don't waste it with another moment of contempt. So what do you want to do today? Rise above your genetics, realize the preciousness of this moment, and evolve further at the hands of Jesus Christ and his teachings. To let go, to construct this ecosystem of the heart free of contempt. Feel the elevation of forgiveness, or just to go on living without it. Let's try. Let's try together with a first step. No contempt. Please, no contempt.
Hope you enjoyed and learned something in this message on the life of Peter from South Main Baptist Church. And whenever you're gone this summer, wherever the season takes you, be sure to check back here for your messages. We hope to see you soon at 4100 Main Street.